That's the same thing Bull said.
The new deputies were sworn in, and the marshal introduced Matt and Sam to the men. Parley Davis was no more than a kid, having just turned 18. But in the West, no matter what the age, when a boy strapped on a gun, he became a man. And when he strapped on a star, he became a walking target. None of the three new deputies had a reckless or careless manner about them, and both Matt and Sam felt the marshal had chosen wisely. They talked with one of the new deputies, Van Dixon, a man around 50.
I come into this country back in 40, boys. Back when the only white men were mountain men. There's still a few of them around. Cantankerous old bastards. But they stay up in the mountains and to themselves and come into town maybe twice a year. Mostly they trade with Ladue. A wise man would leave those old boys alone. I damn sure do. Those men was born with the bark on.
You got right in on the last of the trapping, didn't you?
Yep. I saw a lot of country, made friends with the mountain men and the Indians when either or both would let me. The trouble we have in this country now, boys, is nothing new. I'd put 50% on Bull and 50% on John. They come in within weeks of each other and took one look and went to cussing. Some say they used to be friends. Maybe they was, but I never knew them to be. Between them, they got a passel of kids, 12 or 13 at least. Looks like an army coming in. Only two real good kids among them, Dan Carlin and Connie Sutton. Polite and mild-mannered and just flat-out nice kids. I think they're about 18, 19 years old. The rest of them ain't worth a bucket of slop. I heard you met Wanda and Willa. Well, wait till you meet up with Scarlett Sutton. She puts both of them to shame. Cuss? Lordy, can she cuss. And mean-spirited, too. Mistreats any horse she rides, and I just can't abide that. The way a person treats a horse or a dog tells a body everything you need to know about him. John's got twins, too. Pete and Petunia. That damn Petunia is no flower, believe you me. She's just as mean and ornery as any man, and her brother Pete's about half nuts. He's killed two men that I know of and wounded several more. He's quick with a pistol, I'll give him that. Bull's spread and John's outfit got ranged at meets, and they've always squabbled about that. That's where the trouble will more than likely start.
Have the Sutton and Carlin boys ever tied it up?
Oh, yeah. Fist fights. One shooting that left nobody hurt or dead. They were lucky that time.
Later, Sam and Matt sat on a bench in front of the barber shop and watched as more gun hands rode into town. The swaggering, slung-low and tied-down crowd drifted into whatever saloon wanted them. The marshal walked up and sat down on the bench beside them.
Not a ringer in the bunch. Just young studs trying to make a name or wanting to prove something.
What they'll get is killed.
And kill or hurt a lot of innocent people in the process. Damn both Sutton and Carlin. Damn them. They could both sit back quiet and live rich as kings if they'd mind to.
Shit. Here comes a couple of the young hotshots. Look to be about 18 or 19. They're heading straight towards us.
I don't want trouble, boys.
What are we supposed to do, run away?
Neither of you have done a thing. You're not trouble hunters, and you've got a right to travel and a right to enjoy the comforts of a town after the trail. Do what you think you have to.
The two young gunslingers walked even with the bench and stopped. They were in the middle of the street, standing about 10 feet apart, legs widespread, and hands hovering over the butts of their guns.
Howdy, boys. Is there something we can do for you?
You can stand up and face the Wyoming Kid.
Oh my, the Wyoming Kid.
Wyoming? I'm from Wyoming. What part of Wyoming are you from?
That don't make no never mind. Stand up and prepare to meet your match and die.
I don't know that anyone's ever prepared to die. You sort of remind me of Stan Hines. You related to him? He's got a spread not too far from my dad's.
My name ain't Hines. I'm the Wyoming Kid. Now stand up, Bodine.
Go on back to the saloon, boy. I'll have no trouble in this town.
You shut your mouth, old man, or face me. I'm Utah Bates.
Whoa. Who's next? New Jersey Jesse?
Stop it! I won't have you laughing at me!
Tom wiped his eyes and waved a hand at the teenagers.
We're not laughing directly at you, boys. Now I'm giving you an order. Go on back to the Bull's Den. Right now I've got three deputies behind you. all armed with greeners.
That's the oldest trick in the world, mister, and we ain't gonna fall for it.
I don't run a bluff, lads. You ever see a man cut in two with a sawed off? Messy.
A man stepped out of the bull's den.
Bates! Bates! Kid! Come on back in here. The boss said no trouble in town, and he meant it. Now come on back and cool down.
Big Dan Parker. I didn't see him come into town.
I didn't either. There he is.
Slowly, the two young men relaxed. Bates turned and began walking back to the saloon. The Wyoming Kid paused.
There'll be a day, Bodine. You and me'll settle this.
We have nothing to settle.
Yeah, we do, Bodine.
What's that?
Who's the best?
I can tell you that right now. Now get your butt on back to the saloon and keep out of my sight. Move!
The Wyoming Kid went, but he didn't like it.
You're all right, man. You can stay around here as long as you like. You've both been braced in this town and kept your cool when most others wouldn't. Sam, I'm not so sure that I wouldn't have put lead in Chucky. You boys don't deserve the reputation that's hung on you.
Riley stood up and walked across the street to confer with his new deputies.
It's coming, brother.
Without a doubt. Who have we here?
Four men, all wearing long dusters, were riding slowly up the street. They reined in and dismounted in front of the Carlin house.
Dick Yandel. Last I heard of him, he was in New Mexico.
Raul Melendez in the sombrero.
That's Yak Zapata, the half Apache wearing the campaign hat.
I know the fourth man.
Yeah? Who is it?
It's Philip McKay.
You're joking.
I wish. Somebody paid a lot of money to get him out of retirement.
But he runs a highly successful ranch operation up in Canada.
And we have highly profitable ranches in Wyoming.
Baquet stepped up on the boardwalk and turned, facing the brothers. He smiled at them and tipped his hat.
Since faster gunfighters seem to have dropped off the face of the earth, I will content myself with killing you, Bodine.
You want it now?
No, my young duelist. But soon. Very soon.
Baquet walked into the saloon.
Now this doesn't make sense. There is no way he could have known we were here. It has to be a case of pure coincidence.
One I wish had not occurred.
He's that good?
He'll probably get lead in me.
Now we can't ride out.
No? People have heard the challenge. If I rode away, I'd have every punk gun hand west of the Mississippi looking for me. God damn that Piquet.
Who was that fella who threatened you, Matt?
Philip Piquet.
Jesus, man. John Carlin is really going all out, ain't he?
That would appear to be the case.
Sam took a notepad from his inside vest pocket and added four more names to the tally.
That brings it to 13 known gun hands for Bull, and 12 for John, and 12 to 15 would-bes for each side. More surprises, I suppose.
I do love a parade. I guess now we get to meet the Carlin kids.
That rider looks familiar. Yeah, Bob Goody. You remember him.
I remember him. Looks like he's walking this way, too.
The Texas gunhand came up the boardwalk and stopped in front of Matt and Sam, grinning down at them.
I heard you boys was here. I couldn't believe it. Last time I seen you boys, you was sticking your noses into matters down along the Pecos. That didn't concern you, and neither does this affair.
What's the matter, Bob? Did Hosiah Finch run you out of Texas?
Don't nobody ever run me out of nowhere, Breed.
Get out of the way, Goody. You're blocking my sunlight.
If the boss hadn't said no trouble in this town, Bodine, I'd ask you to make me move.
Ah, shit. Will you people on both sides stop playing kids' games? What the hell is going on around here?
Bob Goody squatted down on the boardwalk and took off his hat, wiping his forehead with the back of his hand.
Tell you the truth, Bodine. I'll be damned if I know. Now, I don't like you or the Breed here, and I figure you and me will shoot it out one of these days, but this situation here, it's odd, Bodine.
Both sides paying top wages?
Best I ever collected. And I ain't fired a shot in a month, excepting at a rattler the other day. It's boring.
We're not on either side, Bob. We're out of this
one. That ain't no good place to be, Bodine. Straddling the fence is as good as taking the wrong side. You better pick one and stay with it, or get the hell gone from here. Them's my feelings about it.
Thanks for leveling with us.
Well, this is a strange situation here, Gives me a right uneasy feeling, not knowing which way the wind is a-blowing.
Goody turned abruptly and walked away, heading for the Carlin house.
Now what do you make of that?
A man staggered out of the bull's den and fell in a bloody heap in the dirt. A puncher followed, the pistol still in his hand. Matt and Sam remained seated on the bench as the saloons emptied and gun hands lined the boardwalks, staring at each other across the street. Tom Riley came at a run to stand over the still conscious, chest-shot man in the dirt.
He's a damn spy for John Carlin. He drew down on me, and I got witnesses to prove it.
He's a liar. I ride for the AT outfit. I just come in for a drink. I ain't no gunfighter.
You don't call me no liar, saddle tramp.
Tom Riley laid a kosh against the gunslick's forehead, and the murderer went down, a swelling knot right between and just above his eyes.
Nate Perry.
Here, Tom.
Get some boys and drag him to the jail. Log him in for murder.
You'll not get away with this, Tom. Bull won't see no man of his on the gallows.
Van, Parley, take the names of all these men who witnessed the shooting in the saloon. After that's done, you boys ride back to the Flying BS and stay the hell there.
Riley turned his back on the Sutton gang and faced the Carlin house.
You men, clear out, right now. Get the hell to the JC range and cool down.
You murdering scum! Goddamn trash, all of you!
Sam and Matt stared at the woman, maybe 21 or so, and looked cute. But it ended there. A citizen standing beside Sam nodded towards her.
That's Petunia Carlin. She's just getting wound up.
You cockneck, shit-eating, hog-fucking sons of bitches!
My word.
I told you.
Petunia, close that nasty mouth of yours and get on back into the dress shop. Now!
Petunia stared at the marshal, stamped her little foot in anger, then flipped him the bird. She stomped back into the shop. A young man stepped away from the Carlin crowd.
You don't talk to my sister like that, Riley!
That there's Pete Carlin, Petunia's twin brother. Crazy mean.
Shut up, Pete, before your butt overloads your mouth.
Hey, mister, why are you talking to us? No one else in town will.
I figure you boys is all right. You just rode into a bad situation and don't have the good sense to ride out.
You don't tell me what to do either, Tom. My pa will skin you and nail your hide to the barn door.
Petunia stuck her bonneted head out of the dress shop.
Pete, shut your damn mouth and get off the boardwalk. You know what Pa said. Move!
Pete sighed and stepped back into the Carlin house. The body of the dead AT puncher was toted off, and the BS rider was dragged off to jail. Matt and Sam had not left the bench during the entire episode. Tom walked slowly over to them. Tom removed his hat and wiped his forehead.
The lid is going to blow off this boiling pot now. I expect to see the whole kit and caboodle of them come storming in.
Petunia appears to be a very nice young lady.
Yes. Oh, my, yes. Very feminine. And what you saw today was just the head of the prairie dog. You boys really are staying out of this mess, aren't you?
Well, we would have backed you if anybody had made a move.
I appreciate that. See you, boys.
The brothers sat and watched the BS and most of the JC riders leave town. Pete and Petunia and a few of their hands remained. Matt and Sam sat and watched Petunia and her brother meet on the boardwalk and start up toward the hotel. They were going to pass right by the brothers.
You know any of the hands with them?
Not a one. I think they're regular punchers, but just remember they ride for the brand.
Lars, do something about removing that greasy engine from my sight, will you?
It'll be my pleasure, Miss Petunia.
Here we go.
On your feet, engine! Get off the streets so those decent women can pace!
I'm very comfortable right where I am.
Why, you, I oughta...
Sam kicked Lars right in the balls with the point of his boot. Lars sank to his knees, his face drained of color. Sam put a boot on the man's chest and shoved him off the boardwalk. He landed in a small cloud of dust.
You may safely pass by, Miss Petunia. I assure you. This Indian has never molested a white woman nor taken a scalp in his life.
Ugh, you trash!
This foul-mouthed wench is calling me trash. Since you're my brother, I guess that tars you with the same brush.
Pete descended on Sam.
Foul-mouthed wench! Get up on your feet, Injun, and take your licking like a white man! Dave, Batty, you watch Bodine!
Sam slowly stood up.
Go!
He then uncorked a right that knocked Pete clean off the boardwalk and into the street. Matt left the bench in a rush and slugged Dave hard, knocking the puncher back into Batty. Batty fell off the high boardwalk and landed in a horse trough, his head banging against the side of the trough. He lay there, water up to his neck, with a stupid smile on his face.
Why, you son of a...
Matt plowed in, both fists swinging. One punch caught Dave on the nose, and the other slammed into his jaw. Matt followed in quickly with an uppercut that clicked Dave's teeth together and crossed his eyes. Matt measured the man and busted him square on the side of the jaw. Dave waited to the boardwalk. Pete slowly rose to his feet, blood leaking from his nose and mouth.
Put him up, Breed!
Finish him. Quit playing around, Sam.
I wasn't playing. That was a good solid...
Pete smacked Sam in the mouth and knocked him sprawling on his butt. Batty had climbed out of the horse trough and hit Matt on the back of the head with a work-hardened fist. Matt rolled and came up to his boots, facing the big and angry puncher.
I'm gonna wear your ass out, Bodine.
A large crowd was gathered, encircling the fighter. Even Tom Riley was there with his deputies. They seemed to be enjoying the show. Matt's fist to the mouth knocked Batty's feet out from under him. He hit the street and didn't move. Sam had literally beaten Pete's face into a pulp, and he still wouldn't stay down. Sam finally spun him around, grabbed the young man by the shirt collar and the seat of his breeches, and drove him head first into a hitch rail post. Pete sank to the ground, his face sinking into a fresh pile of horseshit. Ralph Masters came running up with all his cumbersome camera gear.
Hold that pose!
Sam and Matt leaned against a hitch rail while Ralph got several pictures of the scene.
You sons of bitches! Nobody does this to a Carlin and gets away with it! Nobody! Ever!
Just as Lars was sticking his head over the rim of the boardwalk, Petunia reached into her purse and hauled out a short-barreled hog leg. She blew the hat off Lars's head. Lars fainted dead away.
Holy shit! Dive for cover!
Matt and Sam scrambled under the high boardwalk. Petunia was no hand with a pistol. She shot out one window of the general store, fractured the striped pole outside the barbershop, blew the saddle horn off of a hitched horse on the other side of the street, sending the frightened animal racing up the road, drilled a wooden Indian outside the tobacco and gun shop right between the eyes, and sent the sixth shot rocketing toward space. Petunia hurled the empty gun in frustration. It caught one of the new deputies on the back of the head. He sprawled onto the street, out cold. Tom and the other deputies rushed out from cover. An ample lady grabbed Petunia, but Petunia tore away and socked her on the jaw. The lady reared back and gave Petunia double what she had received. Petunia went down on her bustle with a busted lip. Tom ran over and not too gently jerked Petunia up.
Thank you, Mrs. Jackson.
You're sure welcome, Tom. It was worth a bruised jaw.
You withered up old bitch!
Pitiful.
Where the hell do you think you're taking me, you jackass?
To jail, Petunia. And you best shut that big mouth of yours before I forget that you're a female and turn you over my knee, take off my belt, and give you what your daddy should have given you years back. Now move.
Unhand me, you brute!
Lars opened his eyes and gingerly felt his head.
Am I dead?
No, just under arrest.
Shit, that ain't good. But I guess it's better than being dead.
Meanwhile, a lone figure slipped out of the back of the Carlin house, made his way to the livery, and lit a shuck for home range. Don Carlin was going to hit the ceiling when he learned of this. Matt and Sam crawled out from under the high boardwalk. Both of them were somewhat the worse for wear.
Brother, I know that pride prevents us from doing this, but I honestly think the best thing we could do is saddle up and get the hell gone from this place.
I agree with both statements.
Can you imagine being married to that tuba-mouthed Petunia?
I'd sooner bed down with a skunk. Come on, let's get cleaned up and get something to eat. I figure in about 2 hours or less, this town is going to have one angry father stomping around.
John Carlin rode into town in force, with every man he could muster. All of them were heavily armed, riding with rifles across the saddle horn. It was a formidable army. Carlin's face was dark with fury. Marshal Tom Riley stood alone in front of the jail. He had a spare six-shooter tucked behind his gun belt and held a greener in the crook of his left arm. His deputies were on the rooftops armed with rifles. Matt and Sam lounged near the jail. Sam had taken a spare pistol out of his saddlebags and shoved it behind his belt. Carlin walked his horse to the boardwalk where Tom Riley stood.
You got my daughter in your goddamn jail, Tom. I want her out now.
I don't take orders from you, John. The judge will have to decide what bond will be. There are some serious charges against her.
I hope you're joking, Tom.
Inciting a riot, resisting arrest, disturbing the peace, battery upon a private citizen, assault and battery upon an officer of the law, destruction of private property, endangering the public safety, the list goes on and on. She stays where she is.
Tom, I'm here to get my daughter out of that jail, right now.
Don't push me, John, I'm warning you. I've been pushed all I'm gonna be.
How about my son, Pete?
Pete, I can release.
You're making a bad mistake, Tom Riley.
Do you want your boy or not?
John smiled, a tight little brief curving of the lips, and turned his horse, riding over to the Carlin house. He waved for his men to follow him. Matt and Sam walked over to the marshal.
You think he's stupid enough to try and bust his kids out?
Stupid? No. Mad and arrogant. Yeah.
Daddy!
Get us out of here, Paul!
John stopped at the door to Carlin house, turned and stared back at Tom, then walked into the saloon.
What about those charges? Will the judge uphold them?
Some of them. He'll dismiss the others. I just think it'll do the girl good to cool her heels in the jail for a couple of days. Might teach her some humility.
But you doubt it.
Yeah, whole situation is gonna end in tragedy. I feel it. The kids of both men have been free to do whatever they choose all their lives. Nothing is gonna change them now. They don't know no other way of life. And if I read them right, and I think I do, they won't change even if they could.
Tom, was any of the Carlin kids in that bunch you rode in?
Now that you mention it, no. And that worries me.
You want us to take the back of the jail?
You're dealing in?
Looks like it.
Step in the office, boys. I'll swear you in as temporary county deputies. I got the power to do that.
Here we go again.
Ah, quit bitching. It was your idea.
Only the three regular deputies were informed of Matt and Sam being deputized. Both brothers got greeners from the gun rack and stuffed extra shells in their pockets. They slipped out the back of the jail and took up positions on opposite sides of the building. Their patience paid off after a silent hour. They heard just the faintest rustle of footsteps slipping up the dark alley. Then the shadowy forms of four people could be seen. A fifth man stepped out, then a sixth. Something flashed in the night.
The three deputies is on the rooftops. Tom Riley's sitting outside the office.
Marcel'll be setting the fire in 5 minutes. That ought to draw Tom away.
And if it don't?
Then we kill him.
Matt lifted his greener and aimed up into the soft night air.
She yet!
The sound put the six men flat on the ground and brought Tom on a run through the narrow alley. He appeared on Sam's side of the building.
Get down!
What's going on back yonder?
Watch out for fire! Marcel Carlin will be lighting one any second! Alert the fire brigade!
You men on the ground, and we can see all of you, stand up with your hands over your head, or we start blasting and tearing. One. Two.
Don't shoot, Tom! We're standing up!
Tom recognized the voice as belonging to Clement Carlin.
The hell we are!
Jesus God, don't shoot no more! Stand up, boys! Keep your hands away from your guns!
I got this little turd, Marcel! He was about to set my shop on fire!
The town had thrown monetary reasons to the wind and united at the threat of armed takeover and fire. Men and women appeared with rifles and shotguns and pistols.
Blast anyone who tries to leave the Carlin house! By the front or the back!
Will do, Tom. I'll take the back.
The five members of the breakout team were marched up the alley and to the jail. Johnny and Clement Carlin and three hands stood sullen-faced in the office. Marcel was shoved inside by an angry citizen. Another citizen carried a jug of kerosene and a bag of kerosene-soaked rags. Marcel reeked of the flammable liquid. Tom pulled young Parley to one side.
Ride for the judge, Parley. Bring him up to date and escort him back here tomorrow. I expect the sheriff will come along, too. Go, boy.
Tom jammed the Carlin brothers and the hands into one cell. He was mad to the core, and his face showed it.
Van, you and Nate stay here. Matt, Sam, you boys game for entering the Carlin house?
Let's go.
The three men, armed with sawed-off shotguns, walked across the street. Tom stepped inside, Matt to his left and Sam to his right. Tom's greener was pointed straight at John Carlin. Tom walked to the rancher and placed the twin muzzles against his shirt, belly high.
It's all over, John. I don't care what you and Bull do to each other outside of this town. But if all your hands haven't dropped their gun belts to the floor in 10 seconds, I swear I'll blow your goddamn guts out your back.
John Carlin's face was greasy pale.
Do it, boys. Right now.
Matt was holding his greener on the gang at the bar, and Sam was covering those seated at nearby tables. The hired hands and gunnies knew that at this short distance, the greeners would wipe out half the room, and those left alive would be sorry they were. These were 10-gauge sawed-offs, loaded with ball bearings, rusty nails, and God alone knew what else.
Now, all of you, up against that north wall, and keep your hands in sight. When all the guns are gathered, you boys can ride out, 5 at a time. You show your faces back in this town until after the hearing, I'll kill you on sight. And I think you boys know that I mean every word of that. George, gather up all those guns and stack them on the bar.
Yes, sir, Tom. Right now.
I got a derringer in my back pocket, Marshal, but I ain't got no plans to reach for it.
A half a dozen others had hideout guns, but all stated that openly, and none had plans to try any gunplay. Jacques Zapata and Philip Baquet stood with new respect for the marshal in their eyes, as did most of the hired guns. This, they knew, was a man with no backup in him, and tough clear through. And with Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves now wearing badges, this was a team that would be hard to beat. For now.
Starting with the first 5 nearest the door, get on your horses and ride. I'll let you know when you can pick up your guns. Move.
Tom still stood with the greener shoved up against the belly of John Carlin.
The judge will be here tomorrow, John. I wouldn't try to keep you away from your kids' hearing. And you can bring some hands in with you. The way you and Bull feel about each other, I wouldn't ask you to commit suicide by coming in alone. But all guns will be checked at my office. Clear?
Clear enough.
Now get.
John Carlin got.
Bo? Better wake up, Bo. I got news.
At the Flying BS, Bull Sutton was awakened from a sound sleep. He enjoyed the news.
The judge won't do more than fine those Carlin kids, but the public humiliation will drive him to do something stupid. I know John. He and his family will strike back at the town, and they'll strike back hard. All I gotta do is keep my people in line, and John'll destroy himself. By God, me and my family will be at the hearings, having a good belly laugh at the expense of the Carlins. That'll just put the icing on the cake. All in all, things are working out right goddamn well.
You bald-headed, frog-eyed son of a bitch!
30 days in jail for contempt of court.
Oh, go fuck yourself, Judge!
Petunia! John, far be it from me to tell another man how to raise his children, but this young lady is sadly lacking in social
You're
graces.
You're about to hear how goddamn lacking my social graces are, you at...
Petunia's mother stuck a handkerchief in her daughter's mouth, grabbed her by the hair of the head, jerked her around, and whispered in her ear for a moment. Petunia never said another word for the rest of the proceedings. She sat very still and very pale-faced. Not even John had a clue as to what his wife might have said to her daughter, but he knew best of all that Jenny Carlin could be an iron lady when the situation demanded it. The upshot of it was that Petunia was fined $100 and so was her brother, Petunia being released into her mother's custody, and they were ordered to pay the damages for any property that might have been damaged or destroyed. The judge fined Lars, Dave, and Batty $10. In a separate matter, he ordered the B.S. Hand to be taken back to the county seat for later trial on murder charges. Outside, Bull Sutton, his sons, and his crew stood in front of the empty building where court was being held.
Hey, John! Those snotty kids of yours finally got some comeuppance, huh? It's about damn time!
God damn him all to hell.
John Carlin stormed out onto the boardwalk and knocked Big Bull Sutton flat on his butt in the dirt. Bull got to his feet and shook his head. A crowd was forming.
No. No gunplay. No matter who wins, no gunplay. This is between John and me.
Don't try and stop him. It'd be like trying to stop two grizzlies with a stick.
Maybe they'll get it out of their systems this way.
Or do the town a favor and just kill each other.
John tried to kick Bull. Bull rolled away and caught John's ankle and jerked, spilling the man to the ground. On their knees and in the dirt, the two men fought each other like crazed beasts. Jenny took Petunia home in the buggy. Once there, she had plans for a buggy whip in Petunia's backside. Soon, John and Bull were wringing wet with sweat and splattered with blood. Their noses were broken and pouring blood. Blood dripped from smashed lips and cut faces. Still, neither man would go down for the count. They fought until they were arm-weary and exhausted. Bull shoved John away from him and staggered to a hitch rail, leaning against it and catching his breath. John leaned against a wagon, his chest heaving from exertion. Laredo got a bucket of water and poured it over Bull's head, and Luke got a bucket of water and dumped it on John. Then, the two men went at it again. Bull would knock John down, and then John would knock Bull down. Each man hit the ground so many times, people lost count. Some in the crowd even got bored and went home or to a saloon. It got to the point that the men were taking a good minute to get off the ground. Both of them were staggering from exhaustion. Both men's eyes were nearly swollen shut. Their faces were puffy and bruised. Finally, they both swung at the same time and missed, sending the two wealthy ranchers sprawling face down in the churned-up dirt. Neither had the strength to get up, much less continue the fight.
Load them in wagons and get them out of here.
Sam consulted his watch.
40 minutes. Those two dinosaurs fought for 40 minutes.
Too bad they didn't kill each other.
The sons of both men gave Tom dark and dirty looks, which the marshal ignored.
Maybe this settled it.
Don't count on it.
That week's edition of the Express carried full stories of Petunia and her brother and of the big fight between John and Bull. Photographs of both, including the one that caught them sprawled near unconscious in the street, could be seen in the windows of the newspaper office. A picture of Pete Carlin's face in horseshit was a real crowd pleaser. Ralph ran off extra copies of the Express and mailed them all over the territory, including a copy to the governor and the president of the United States. For a week, nothing happened. Not one gun hand from either side rode into town. Young Parley heard that Jenny Carlin took a buggy whip to Petunia's backside, and Petunia was still being real careful about sitting down. Matt and Sam had just about made up their minds to pull out. It looked like Bull and John had settled their differences. Neither had won, but neither had lost. Matt, Sam, and Tom were inside the marshal's office when a lone rider reined in.
Frank Anderson rides for Bull. He's a cowboy, period. Never had a moment's trouble out of him.
He's packed to ride. His saddlebags are full, and his war bag is tied to the horn.
Frank stepped into the office and took off his hat.
Just thought I'd stop by and say adios, Tom. I'm hauling my ashes.
What's the matter, Frank?
Little Jimmy Dexter and Peck Hill are about an hour behind me. Bull is sending them in to brace Bodine.
Why?
No particular reason, I reckon, other than just to keep things stirred up. I can't take no more of it. Laredo is the only hand left out there that's worth a damn. All the real punchers have pulled out one by one. I figured I was the only real drover left. I got me a job down in Utah, doing what I do best, and that's looking at the ass end of cows. So I'm gone. Good luck, Bodine.
This don't make no sense. They must know that you two are no longer deputized, and that you've never taken sides against either ranch. Why single you out, Bodine?
Bodine shrugged and checked each pistol.
None of this has made any sense to me. Not from the very first. but I won't run. And if they call me out, I'd feel obliged to meet them.
We will meet them. I'm going back to the hotel for my second gun. Be back in a minute.
You boys could ride out.
That's not an option. And there's no law in this territory that says a man can't protect himself. Not yet, anyway. Was I you, Tom, I'd clear the streets.
The blood-bonded brothers were waiting on the boardwalk of the quickly deserted street when the riders came into view. Four of them.
I recognize Dexter and Hill. I don't know the other two.
Local toughs. Les King and Willie Durham. Thugs. They'll do anything for a dollar.
You be sure and bear their dollars with them.
The brothers watched the gun hands rein up and dismount and walk into the bull's den for a shot or two of amber-colored courage. The brothers rolled cigarettes and waited.
No point in trying to get you boys to back out of this, is there?
Nope.
You know better than to even ask.
I reckon.
Oh, look up by the newspaper office.
Ralph Masters was hurrying up the boardwalk, carrying his bulky photographic equipment.
Ralph! Set up in that alley and stay out of the line of fire. Don't get killed or hurt for a damn picture.
I'm a reporter. I go where the news is.
The Wyoming kid suddenly stepped out of Bull's Den.
Where in the hell did he come from?
He must have come in the back way.
I wonder where Utah Bates is.
Isn't five enough? You want an even six?
I like round numbers.
Well, you're about to get your liking, brother. Here they come. And the sixth is Utah Bates. Stupid punk.
I hope you don't think we're going to stand out in the street and face six men, Sam.
We stand right where we are until after the first volley. Then I'll drop down behind the water trough, and you duck into the alley. How's that sound?
You're so sneaky, Sam. Is that the Cheyenne coming out in you?
Indians aren't sneaky. We're just courageous. Why do you think the white man calls us braves?
What the hell are you two giggling about?
A private joke. Why are you after us?
Maybe it's because you is you, and we is us.
Say what?
Don't ask him to repeat it. It'll still sound stupid.
The six men moved closer, all spread out.
You boys are brave, aren't you? 6-2. I guess they really are scared of us, Sam.
Sam ended the career of Peck Hill. Sam jumped for the protection of the trough, and Matt beat it for the alley.
Mr. Wyoming, can you hold that pose, please?
The Wyoming kid spun around, both hands filled with 45s, and started firing at the reporter. Sam leveled his 44 and dusted the kid.
Oh! Oh, man! It hurts! Jesus Christ, I'm sorry! Oh, someone... Can someone please stop the pain? Oh, Jesus, God, I hurt! Mama!
The remaining three toughs had seen the error of the open street and hightailed it to cover. Then one of their shots went wild and shattered a window in the marshal's office. Tom grabbed up a Winchester, came out the back door, circled around, and came up the alley.
Masters, what are you doing here, you damn fool? Are you trying to get killed?
Just doing my job, Tom. This is great stuff. The folks back east will eat it up. Holy shit!
The newspaperman dived for cover.
Good, now stay there.
Tom crouched at the edge of the building, looking the situation over.
You flying BS riders, this is Tom Riley. Give us up right now.
Tom leveled his Winchester and gave as much as he received, working the lever as fast as he could, his fire pinning down the punk who called himself Utah Bates. Utah jumped through a window into the dressing room of Miss Charlotte's fashionable gowns. Utah Bates came back out the same window he had entered, followed by an enraged Miss Charlotte with a shotgun. Several pellets caught Utah in the ass, and he scrambled under the building next to the dress shop.
Shit!
Seeing Utah surprised a dog hiding under there. He shot back out into the street, bleeding from the snoot and the butt. The dog followed. Les King and his buddy Willie quickly assessed their situation and found it not to their liking. They both hit the air and headed for the country. They could always steal a horse later. Matt and Sam and the marshal stepped out into the street, reloading as they walked. Dr. Blaine came running, carrying his little black bag, and the Undertaker was two steps behind him.
Deputies, Get after those others. Bring them back here. And I don't give a damn whether they're sitting in a saddle or tied across it.
The brothers and the marshal stood over the Wyoming kid. The doctor looked up at them.
He might live, but I doubt it. All depends on what the slug destroyed as it passed through.
To hell with him! What about me?
Doc Blaine walked over to where little Jimmy Dexter lay.
You're finished, man. Make your peace with God.
You go to hell, Sawbones.
The undertaker knelt on one knee beside the dying man.
Now, you can be assured that you will be stretched out fine. Of course, how fine depends on whether or not you got any money. Do you happen to have any currency on you now?
Get your nasty hands off of me, you leech.
Ungrateful wretch.
Tom Riley pointed to a citizen who had ventured out of a shop.
You, go get their horses and take them to the livery. They now belong to the town, and all their possessions with them.
Well now, I suppose you will have a nice service after all.
Bastard!
Little Jimmy Dexter cut his eyes to Matt.
You quit, man. It's sneaky, too. I like that. You're all right, Bodine. I'm glad it was you who done me in. Yes, sir. Born to the gun. Both of you. No matter what you do, you'll never get shut of the smell of gun smoke.
We can try.
Won't do you no good. You're just like Hickok and Long Lynn, Masterson and Herbs. So long, boys.
Matt noticed that the man's clothing was frayed and patched, and his boots were worn out. He took a double eagle from his vest pocket and handed it to the owner of the general store.
Get him a new suit for burying.
He and Sam turned as one and headed for the hotel. The general store owner turned to Tom.
Strange man.
Not really. See, he's good with a gun, but he's not a killer. There's a world of difference between the two.
The Wyoming kid lay leaning toward death in the doctor's small clinic, unaware of the quick burial of little Jimmy Dexter in Peck Hill. Willie Durham, Utah Bates, and Les King had beat it back to the Flying BS range and safety. The sheriff rode down from the county seat and said he couldn't see any charges that might be brought against the men. It was a simple case of men calling out other men. There was no law against it. He admitted that it didn't make any sense, but when did Bull Sutton or John Carlin do anything that made any sense? As far as Matt Bodine and Sam Tools were concerned, they felt free to pull out and were packing up to do so when Sam noticed an envelope someone had slid under the door. Sam picked it up and opened it, removing a single sheet of paper.
Check their back trail.
Check whose back trail?
Sutton and Carlin, I suppose. Why ask us to do it? Why have we become the central players in this mystery?
Hell if I know. But for convenience sake, I'll just blame it on you. Come on, let's go see Tom.
Tom Riley studied the words on the paper for a long time.
No idea who slipped this under your door?
Nope. We didn't hear a thing.
Who would know about Sutton and Carlin?
Ledoux. He's older than dirt and was here before anybody else.
I'll wager Ledoux didn't slip the note under our door. Someone in this town did that.
Who and why?
It's a mystery to us, too.
I don't like mysteries. They irritate me. Someone in town either knows something about Sutton and Carlin, or they want us to think they do. If it's the latter, why?
To throw us off the real trail. But I tend to think they don't know as much as they suspect something might be down their back trail.
You'd make a good lawman. You know, if you boys were to stick around, the county would pick up your hotel tab. But not your food. You two eat like lumberjacks.
You want us to go see Ledoux?
If you would.
And so Sam and Matt found themselves once again at Ledoux's trading post.
You boys toting badges?
In a manner of speaking, if you know what I mean.
You is and you ain't. Sure, you're helping out Tom Riley. Tom's a good man, and he don't kowtow to nobody. You want to know about Carlin and Sutton, don't you? Well, pour some coffee and park your butts, and let's get to John. There was something odd about them two. I sensed it right off. Bad blood between them right off the mark. They come in here with their wives and their kids, and a bunch of no-count men are trailing cattle with the brands reworked so sloppy a one-eyed drunk could have seen it a week away. And them two wasn't a month apart getting here. It was like it was, well, planned. But the way they feel about each other, you know it wasn't. It was just one of those things, I reckon. But give 'em credit for a few things, howsomever. They fought Injuns and outlaws and so forth and settled this area. They done that all right. I think they come in from Missouri, both of 'em. But they wasn't Missouri-born. I disremember the cowboy's name who told me that. Not that it makes any difference, because shortly after he did, he was found shot stone dead. Him and me, we got on right good. The cowboy I'm talking about. And he said, "Oh, Kentucky, by God, that's where," he said, "Carlin and Sutton come from original. Sure did. About 50 miles from one another back yonder." I asked if Carlin and Sutton knowed each other back there, and he said he didn't think so.
Did they ever socialize?
Not to my knowledge. And that seemed odd to me. You see, other than the few mountain men who stayed in this area, them two was the first whites to come in and settle. But I don't never recall them getting together for no funnin'.
Not even the women?
No. And the kids hate each other. I guess the parents taught them to. Hell, except for Connie and Dan, all them kids are as squirrely as a tree full of nuts. And the girls is just as unpredictable and dangerous as the boys. The boys has all killed, every one of them. They like to kill. You can see it in their eyes. Mean, rattlesnake eyes. You both have seen the type. And there ain't nothing wrong in their heads, neither. They're just mean. Bullies. They like to hurt people and animals. And I ain't got no use for none of them. I told Johnny Carlin to his face that if I ever caught him on my property, I'd kill him on sight with no words needed to be spoken. They all leave me alone. One of these days, the Carlin kids and the Sutton kids is going to meet up somewheres, and they's going to be the god-awfulest shootout this territory's ever known. You just mark my words on that.
What you've told us today. Have you ever told anyone else?
No, no reason to. Nobody ever asked me.
The brothers talked with the old mountain man most of the afternoon.
You know, you should write all this down. It's a part of history.
Oh, shit. I've started to a dozen times, lad. But who'd believe it? You should have seen this country when I come out here. It was the most beautiful sight I'd ever seen. Injuns now, they respect the land. White man, he just takes from it. Don't make no effort to put back. Seems like white men, they got to dig and gouge and cut and clear, and they don't look no further than the end of their noses. White men, it seems, don't respect nothing except money and power. White men is greedy. They always want more than they need.
That old man makes a lot of sense.
As the brothers rode back to town, they left the road and took to a game trail. Both of them felt that was safer.
Someone's coming.
They dismounted, holding the muzzles of their mounts in an effort to keep them quiet.
I don't care what you say. This deal don't make no sense, and I'm pulling out. Me and Junior is heading down to Utah. I'm gonna tell you something, Ben. Will Sutton is crazy as a road lizard, and so is John Carlin. And them kids of theirs is nuttier still. Hold up here. I think I got a loose shoe. It ain't clear to me. If it was cattlemen against sheep herders or nesters, I could see it. Cattlemen fighting over water rats? Fine. That's clear. But why are these two spreads fighting? Lord, man, they got everything in the world and more. It ain't water. It ain't land. It ain't sheep. It ain't nothing that I can see. Two kids want to get hitched up. So big deal. I ain't dying over no damn wedding.
There's more to it than that.
Oh, yeah? Well, can you tell me what it is?
I don't rightly know.
See? You don't know shit.
I know the pay's good, best I've seen in a long time. I ain't turning my back on that much money.
Ben, I ain't got nothing against Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. Why does both Sutton and Carlin want Matt dead? Him and Sam just drifted in and was planning on drifting out. This deal is crazy.
I'm aiming on killing Bodine because I want to kill him.
Not if I can call him out first.
He's faster than you, Big Dan. And faster than you too, Dick. You boys leave him to me.
That shoe loose or not?
New. I pried out of stone. He's all right. You ready, Junior?
Yeah, let's ride.
See you, boys.
I never figured Henry for Yeller.
They ain't Yeller. Him and Junior just might be the only ones with any sense among us.
Sam, I'm beginning to get irritated.
Understandable.
I feel like calling Bull and John out. Both of them. Together.
Not a good move, my brother. As big as Bull is, you'd have to hit a vital organ or a big bone to even jar him. He'd get lead in you. Besides, this mystery is becoming intriguing. Don't you think so?
Matt gave him a dark look and swung into the saddle.
Where are we going?
To see Bull Sutton.
Are you crazy?
No. Are you coming or not?
Well, shit.
As he rode off, Sam Two Wolves was thinking some flat-out awful things about Matt Bodine. Matt and Sam stopped a respectable distance from the huge two-story home.
Hello, the house!
Boss! It's that damn Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves!
What? Let them ride on in. Pass the word, no shooting. They didn't come here to make trouble. They're brave boys, but not stupid.
Matt and Sam looped their reins around a metal ring set in a hitch post. Bull Sutton faced them from the large porch of the mansion.
Come on up, boys. The only people who've ever been turned away from a meal at this house was named Carlin. Mother, tell the cook to hotten up the coffee and bring something to eat. Come on up and sit, boys. There'll be no shooting this evening unless you start it.
We won't. Just coffee would be fine. You'll probably throw us off the place in about 2 minutes anyway.
I doubt it. Have a seat, boys, while I go in and get me a bottle. Then we'll talk.
Hey, speak for yourself, brother. If there's a chance I might die, I'm going out with a full belly.
Bull came back out with a large tray containing plates piled high with food, fresh-baked bread, a coffee pot with cups, and a bottle of whiskey for himself.
There you go. Now, what's on your minds, boys? You took an awful chance coming up here this evening.
We were on trail above the road about an hour or so ago. Ben Connors, Big Dan Parker, Dick Lauren, and a couple of more men named Junior and Henry came along. The conversation was interesting, to say the least. According to them, both you and John Carlin want me dead. I'm just curious as to why.
The brothers could see the frown on Bull's face in the dim lamplight.
I gave no orders to have you killed, none at all. And while I'm not a church-going man, I do believe in the hereafter. And I'll stand in church with a parson as witness, with my hand on a Bible, and swear to that, boys.
It's good enough for me, Bull.
Mr. Sutton, why do you and Carlin hate each other so?
You boys got an hour or so to listen?
We have all the time it takes.
Bull set his whiskey aside.
Me and John came out here within days of each other from Missouri by way of Kentucky. We both had a lot in common, and for a while I thought we could be friends. We're both orphans, both taken in by good Christian people, and come to find out we'd been raised up within a hoot and a holler of one another. Problem is,